We start in the central west of New South Wales, where ceremonies have been held for today's 70th anniversary of the Cowra breakout. 231 Japanese and 4 Australian soldiers died in the mass escape at Cowra's POW camp. It was the only land battle fought on Australian soil in two world wars. Angela Owens is the morning's presenter with the local ABC radio station, and she's been at Cowra for the service. Hi, Ange, you're still awake?
Just, Cam. No, it was quite a special occasion, worth getting up early for.
Yeah, so it was 2 a.m. It would have been a chilly service. Who attended?
In fact, look, there were about 100 people there, which was not a bad effort given it was a Monday night, early Tuesday morning, hovering around 0 degrees, Cam, very crisp, clear winter morning, not dissimilar to the conditions 70 years ago this morning. And in fact, the reason for the 2 a.m. start was that was when the Cowra breakout, when the 1,100 or so Japanese POWs stormed the barbed wire fences of the camp in basically what was a suicide mission.
So what's such a significant event in Australian history, in Australian war history? What's the mood been like in Cowra over the last few days?
Interesting. It's attracted a lot of people to the area, international guests as well, tourists and dignitaries. Plenty of people, Japanese tourists and Japanese dignitaries. And if we remember that this particular event was something that Japanese people weren't taught in school at all, it was a very shameful part of Japanese history. The fact that there's been a big turning around, Cam, and there's busloads of tourists, basically, Japanese tourists, coming to Cowra for a couple of days of commemorations is really quite something. There's been a real buzz to the town. It's not a very big place, but this is certainly one of those events that's put Cowra on the map in terms of military history, significant events. It's, as you said, the only land battle fought on Australian soil in two world wars. So it's far from a celebration. It's a very sombre occasion, but a very important one to acknowledge.
So we'll hear a little more from the 2 a.m. service in just a moment. But you've been in Cowra since the weekend. What has the town been doing? What events have been on?
All sorts of things going on, from community parties, basically, to performances, art exhibition. A couple of big gun guest speakers in town, authors and historians Tom Keneally and Harry Gordon. Also up at the Cowra War Cemetery, where it's the only Japanese war cemetery in Australia. There have been wreath-laying ceremonies, a flyover, the wreath-laying for Australian and Japanese soldiers, a very special serving of tea to the war dead. That was on Sunday afternoon by a deputy tea master coming over from Japan for this occasion. One of the highlights, I would say, Cam, was 93-year-old Teruyu Murakami, who has been attending Cowra breakout anniversary events. This is his 7th visit, Cam. He's 93. He's a sprightly thing. But he is one of the last surviving Japanese POWs who was housed in Canberra and the only one well enough to make the trip to Australia. So it was very special to have him in town for this event. But I reckon, I have to say, one of the most powerful events was in the early hours this morning. Out at the site, a bit of an eerie feeling. It was a very brief service to mark the moment the breakout started. The piece of audio we've got for you starts with Lawrence Ryan, the chair of the Cowra POW Breakout 70th Anniversary Committee.
Welcome to number 12 POW Camp Cowra. The date, Tuesday the 5th of August 2014. Time, approaching 2 a.m. Temperature, around 0 degrees. 70 years ago to the day since the fateful events of the Cowra breakout. As we stand here in the quiet stillness of an Australian winter night, it's hard to believe that this is the site of the only land battle fought on Australian soil during World War II. Yet here, exactly 70 years ago, a series of events that would forever change Cowra were about to begin. Rumours of a breakout by Japanese prisoners of war were not new. They had been heard around town since the Japanese began to arrive at the camp 18 months before. But now the POWs have been given the trigger for an incident. Within days, the Japanese prisoners of war population would be divided, with soldiers below the rank of Lance Corporal sent to the camp in far-off Hay. The decision would be the spark to light the flame, the reason needed by the Japanese to rebel against their captors and to die in a frantic charge at the perimeter fences that would erase the shame of captivity forever. The time for this charge would be 2 a.m. Just before 2 a.m, a lone POW races towards Broadway. He is waving frantically and screaming incoherently that something bad is about to happen. He approaches Private Alfred Roll, standing on the other side of the barbed wire. He is shivering with fear. Suddenly, a bugle call rings out from the Japanese huts, and over 1,000 prisoners of war charge from the burning buildings towards the perimeter fences. Private Roll stands for a moment transfixed before firing 2 warning shots into the air. The official warning of trouble within the camp. 3 flares light the night sky to alert the nearby military training camp. The Kaura POW breakout has begun. Close your eyes and imagine the fire. The machine guns firing. The screams of defiance, the cries of pain and the silence of death. 70 years ago to this minute, 1,104 Japanese prisoners of war took part in the Kaura breakout. In the final counting, 231 died, 107 were wounded, and 334 escape into the surrounding countryside. 4 Australians are killed and another 8 wounded. As you stand here tonight, remember those men who died at this spot at that time. Remember their fear, their inner torment. Remember their sacrifice for their countries and remember the horrors of war. But also remember that their terrible sacrifice was in itself a trigger. A trigger in this town for something unique. For out of their sacrifice, their needless deaths has developed a sense of understanding, respect and reconciliation between nations that has produced the Kaura of today.
Private Alfred James Rolls was the first Australian soldier to realise something was happening at the Kaura POW camp on the 5th of August. His son, Gordon Rolls, was in Kaura for the commemorations and shared the rest of his father's story after those warning shots were fired.
The Japanese stormed out of the huts, stormed the fences and broke into Broadway, where Dad and them were standing. The order was given to run for your lives. So they ran to the southern end of Broadway and just got out in time to lock the gates behind them. The Japanese informer, who they said was a Japanese who came to warn Dad what was going to happen, didn't run with them, and the Japanese killed him.
Was it something he talked much about, Gordon?
Not a lot, because when it all happened and they went to court for the inquiries and everything, everything was sort of, they were told to only answer the questions that they were asked and basically not to talk too much. And as he said, well, there was 4 of us in Broadway at the time, but there was only 3 of us with rifles. So he said, we're completely outnumbered. When we got out of Broadway, we fired shots back into Broadway. But he said, and no prisoner escaped at the southern end of Broadway.
It wasn't just Australians sharing their stories. One of the last surviving Japanese prisoners of war, 93-year-old Mr. Teruyu Murakami, made the journey from Japan to Kaura. He was a man of little words, but through his translator, historian and researcher Mami Yamada, he did say why it was important for him to be in town for commemorations.
I have to do the prayers for those who lost their lives, my former comrades. That's the first thing I have to do.
Mami Yamada has spent a lot of years with Mr. Murakami and other Japanese POWs recording their stories. She said there are 2 main things they want to get across to the Australian people.
Yesterday, I was with Mr. Murakami, of course, and I was asking so many questions about the breakout. And I asked him, what is your feeling right now? Mm-hmm. And he said that I want to apologize to the people in Australia to make this breakout. And then, just after that, he came to, where was it? It was Information Center.
Yes.
There was a guest book, and he started to write something, and I was watching, and he put 5 letters in English, in Japanese. It said, arigato. It means thank you. So I think sorry and thank you are 2 things Mr. Murakami wanted to convey to the people of Australia. And I think that's exactly the thing that many other POWs also want to say to Australian people who were very, very kind all the time, even during the wartime, to the Japanese POWs.
But today's anniversary is not only about remembering the tragic events in Kaura. It's about reflecting on the friendship that has been forged between Japan and Kaura and how to sustain this into the future. Kaura resident Bruce Weir was 16 when the breakout occurred. He and his family had two encounters with escaped POWs seeking refuge on their property. His mother amazed locals with her generosity towards the Japanese captives, serving them tea and scones before letting the army take them back to camp. Bruce recalled what the relationship between the two people was like 70 years ago.
It was a very tentative period. There were people who had very strong feelings about the Japanese and what they had caused in the Pacific. I was terrified of them, I have to say, but I would like to think that misunderstanding that was evident in 1944 between the two peoples, the Japanese and the Australians, has somewhat been alleviated by the events that have happened in Kaura in the intervening years since. I'd like to think also that what my mother did, metaphorically speaking, was the forging of the first link in a very long chain of events that enabled the building of that bridge across the gap of misunderstanding.
The respect, understanding and reconciliation between Japan and Kaura has been evident across the commemorations. Japanese Ambassador to Australia, Mr. Yoshitaka Akimoto, reflected on this friendship.
On the evening of the 5th of August 1944, a tragic event took place in Kaura. However, over the last 70 years, this event of sadness and pain has steadily developed into a symbol of reconciliation and friendship between our two countries. During the last 70 years, the Japanese cemetery, Japanese garden, Cherry Avenue, and Peace Pathway have been built in Kaura. At the same time, former POWs from the camps in Australia and Japan, together with other Australian and Japanese returned servicemen, have extended a hand of friendship and have steadily promoted reconciliation. I would like to express my heartfelt thanks and respect to all of those people who overcame the tragic events of the past and made selfless efforts to honor the memory of those who lost their lives during the breakout. In doing so, they have made an invaluable contribution to the reconciliation of the two countries.
The Kaura breakout isn't the only significant military anniversary at the moment. Yesterday marked 100 years since the start of World War I. A ceremony in town was the focal point of New South Wales's commemorations. It was attended by dignitaries from around the world, including Lieutenant General Ken Gillespie, who is the chair of the New South Wales Centenary of ANZAC Advisory Council.
In the early days of the Centenary of ANZAC Advisory Council, we were trying very hard to work out what it was that we wanted the state to get out of the centenary period. And we really could have just said, what Kaura's got is what we want. A history built on tragedy. That tragedy led to people coming together, of learning, of understanding, of education, of friendship, and making a real legacy out of that, you know, set of tragic events. And the important part is that it involves the whole of the community, that involves school children, education, tourism. It's a wonderful legacy. And so if we can have other communities around the state doing what Kaura has done today and over the week remembering the breakout, then we'll have a pretty special centenary period.
Lieutenant General Ken Gillespie, who's chair of the New South Wales Centenary of ANZAC Advisory Council, speaking there to Angela Owens from ABC Local Radio. Ange is still with me. Ange, you're obviously familiar with a lot of the history around this event, being in the region, but how has the last few days and last night in particular changed your understanding of the events?
Look, it's been a powerful experience. It's one of those things, Cam, I'm sure you've experienced many times as well, where history comes to life. It comes off the pages, and hearing voices like Bruce Weir talk about his mum and the compassion and kindness kindness she showed. And I don't know if you remember the famous photo there of the POWs drinking tea in the back of a truck. Hearing those stories from regional people, who many of whom have lost loved ones who have been in Japanese POW camps themselves during World War II, it wasn't an easy process. It's not an automatic thing that the Japanese and the Australian people would be have this point of friendship that they talk about so strongly now. So understanding how that happened was really important for me, and how a community heals. And it doesn't, my sense is that it doesn't happen quickly. It takes decades and decades for that. And that there are lots of things that you need that sort of those physical reminders around the place. And I guess Kaura has got the beautiful Japanese gardens, the cherry blossoms, the avenue there, the war cemetery, and the peace bell. I don't know if you know, there's only one of seven bronze peace bells in the world, UN peace bell, in Kaura's central area. It's the only one in Australia. And there's lots of events that happen around that. That's that sort of constant reminder about the commitment to peace and reconciliation.
And well, thank you for giving us a better understanding of the history and what's taken place just last night and the last few days as well. There's I see there's some pictures up on the website, abc.net.au/centralwest. I've sent them out on Twitter as well. Thanks a lot, Ange. You better get some sleep, huh?
Yeah, thanks, Cam.
Angela Owens, who's the morning's presenter at the local ABC radio station in the central west of New South Wales.